You know, sometimes you read the headlines about the economy and it just feels, well, complicated.
Yeah, definitely. It can seem pretty dense.
Well, if that's you, you're in the right spot. Today, we're doing a deep dive into something really fundamental: monetary policy. Think of it as getting behind the curtain to see how those big money decisions actually get made.
Exactly. We've looked through a chapter summary, some detailed revision notes, basically trying to pull out the key stuff for you. Our mission really is just to make monetary policy, well, make sense. Clear, concise, maybe even a little surprising sometimes.
So we're talking about what it is, how it works, and crucially, why it matters to, everyday life.
Precisely.
Okay, let's jump in. Monetary policy. In plain English, what are we talking about?
Okay, so at its core, it's about what the central bank does to manage money and credit flowing through the economy.
Managing the flow.
Yeah, mainly by influencing interest rates and the overall amount of money available. The big goal is just keeping the economy running smoothly.
Right, and smoothly. What does that mean in practice? What are they actually trying to achieve?
Well, think of it like juggling. They're trying to keep a few key things balanced. They want to control inflation, keep prices from rising too fast, so your money holds its value.
Important.
Very. They want a stable currency. They're aiming to help create jobs or promote employment. And fundamentally, they're trying to influence the overall speed of the economy. Aggregate demand, economic growth, stop it getting too hot or too cold.
Okay, like thermostats and steering wheels combined.
Kind of, yeah. It's definitely a balancing act.
So those are the goals. What about the tools? How do they actually do this stuff?
They've got a few main levers. The big ones are adjusting interest rates, managing the money supply, and sometimes getting involved with exchange rates.
Interest rates, that's the one we probably feel most directly, I guess. Like with mortgages, how do they influence those?
Yeah, that hits home for a lot of people. They don't set your mortgage rate directly usually. Instead, they focus on a key benchmark rate. Often it's the rate banks charge each other for overnight loans. Think of it as the base rate for money.
The wholesale price.
Exactly. By tweaking that short-term rate, they start a ripple effect. It influences savings rates, car loans, business loans, and yes, mortgages.
So if they lower that benchmark,
Then borrowing generally gets cheaper for the commercial banks, and they'll usually pass some of that saving on to their customers, you and me.
Okay, so chipper borrowing for me, how does that ripple out into the wider economy? What's the effect?
Well, if loans are cheaper, you might be more tempted to, say, borrow for a big purchase, like a car, or do some home improvements. That's more spending. Businesses see lower rates too. They might think, okay, now's a good time to invest. Buy equipment, expand, maybe hire people.
Which means more jobs, potentially.
Potentially, yes. And there's another interesting angle. Lower rates can sometimes boost asset prices,
Like houses.
like houses or stocks. If those go up, people feel wealthier and maybe spend a bit more freely. It all kind of connects.
Wow, okay. And you mentioned international stuff too. How does that fit in?
Right, that's another layer. If, say, the UK raises its interest rates compared to the US, investors might want to put their money in the UK to get that higher return. So they buy pounds.
Which pushes the pound up.
Exactly. Increased demand strengthens the currency. Now, a stronger pound means imports get cheaper for people in the UK. Good for buying stuff from abroad.
But there's always a but.
But it makes UK exports more expensive for people in other countries. So companies selling goods overseas might find it tougher.
Right, I see the trade-off. Okay, so that's interest rates. What about the money supply lever? How do they actually increase or decrease the cash sloshing around? Is it just printing presses?
Ah, the printing press image. It's classic. But physical cash printing is usually a pretty small part of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A much bigger tool is something called open market operations.
Sounds technical.
It just means the central bank buying or selling things, usually government bonds, in the open market.
Okay.
So if the central bank buys bonds from commercial banks, it pays for them with new money. It's basically injecting cash into the banking system.
Ah, so the banks suddenly have more reserves.
Exactly. And with more reserves, they can potentially lend out more money to businesses and individuals. That expands the money supply.
And if they sell bonds.
They take cash out of the system. Banks have fewer reserves, lending might tighten, and the money supply growth slows or shrinks.
Okay, that's much clearer than just imagining vaults filling up. Are there other ways money gets created or the supply grows?
Oh, absolutely. A huge driver is actually just regular banks making loans.
How does that create money?
Well, when a bank grants you a loan, they don't usually hand you a suitcase of cash. They credit your bank account.
Poof! New deposit money exists that wasn't there before.
Wow. Okay, so lending is money creation in a way. In a very real way, yes. Then there's government spending. If the government spends more than it takes in taxes, it borrows. If the central bank helps finance that, or banks buy the government debt, that can also increase the money supply.
Right.
And even international trade plays a role. If a country consistently sells more overseas than it buys,
a trade surplus.
Yeah. Foreign currency flows in, gets exchanged for domestic currency, and adds to the overall money supply. It's like a whole ecosystem.
Definitely feels like an ecosystem. Okay, the third tool was exchange rates. How do they use that one? It feels linked to the interest rates bit.
It is linked, but sometimes governments or central banks intervene more directly. They might try to influence their currency's value for trade advantages.
Like making exports cheaper.
Exactly. If a country deliberately weakens its currency, its products become less expensive for foreign buyers.
Give me an example.
Imagine Japan wants to boost its car exports.
Mm-hmm.
If the yen weakens against the dollar, a Toyota made in Japan costs fewer dollars for an American buyer.
So more sales for Toyota, potentially.
That's the aim. Support domestic industry, maybe create jobs in those export sectors.
But again, the flip side, does it make things more expensive at home?
It usually does. A weaker currency means imports cost more. So the price of imported goods, maybe fuel, electronics, even food, could go up for Japanese consumers. That can feed into domestic inflation.
Trade-offs everywhere. Okay, so those are the tools. Let's talk strategy. We hear about expansionary and contractionary policy. Can you break those down?
Sure. Think of the economy like that car again. Sometimes it's going too slow, maybe stalling.
Like in a recession?
Exactly. That's when you might use expansionary policy. It's like pressing the accelerator.
Oh.
By lowering interest rates, maybe doing some of that bond buying to increase the money supply. The goal is to encourage borrowing, spending, investment. Basically boost demand and get the engine running faster.
Got it. Gas pedal. So contractionary is the brake.
That's the perfect analogy. Contractionary policy is for when the economy is overheating, maybe inflation's getting too high. So you tap the brakes, raise interest rates, maybe sell bonds to slow money supply growth. You're trying to cool down demand, stop prices spiraling out of control.
Makes sense. Accelerator and brake. Now, when they push these pedals, it's not instant, right? I've heard about a multiplier effect. What's that about?
Yes, the multiplier. It's a key concept. It basically means that an initial policy change, like a small cut in interest rates, can end up having a much bigger total impact on the economy.
How does that work?
Well, that rate cut might encourage, say, one company to invest a bit more.
Okay.
That investment creates income for workers or suppliers. They then spend some of that new income.
Right. Buying groceries or whatever.
Exactly. Which creates income for the grocer, who then spends some,
mm-hmm.
and so on. The initial injection of spending or lending gets multiplied as it circulates through the economy. Increased confidence can amplify it too.
So a small nudge can create big ripples.
That's the idea. It highlights how powerful these policy tools can potentially be.
Okay, really important. Now, just to make sure we've nailed it, the sources of money supply growth. You mentioned bank lending, government borrowing. Could we just quickly list the main ones again?
Sure. Good idea to recap. So key sources are, number one, commercial banks creating money through new loans.
Right. The poof moment.
Yeah. Two, government spending, especially if it involves borrowing, potentially from the central bank or through bond sales.
Okay.
Three, the central bank itself lending money to commercial banks. Four, the central bank buying assets like those government bonds. Quantitative easing is a form of this.
Mm-hmm.
And five, a persistent trade surplus bringing foreign currency into the country. Those are the big channels.
That's a great summary. It feels like a very complex machine they're trying to operate,
yeah.
Which makes me think, it can't always work perfectly, can it? What are the limits?
Absolutely not. It's definitely not magic. There are significant limitations and challenges.
Like what?
Well, the state of the economy itself matters hugely. If things are really bad and everyone's scared,
confidence is low.
Exactly. If consumer and business confidence is rock bottom, you can cut interest rates to near zero. But people and firms might still be too nervous to borrow or invest. Like pushing on a string.
I see. Psychology plays a big part.
A massive part. Also, global factors. We live in a connected world. A financial crisis somewhere else or big shifts in commodity prices can swamp domestic policy effects.
Right.
And a really tricky one, time lags.
Ah, the delay you mentioned?
Yeah. It can take months, sometimes well over a year, for the full impact of an interest rate change to filter through the entire economy. By the time it hits, the situation might have changed completely.
So they're always aiming at a moving target based on old data with tools that take ages to work.
That's a pretty good, if slightly brutal, summary. It highlights the challenge.
Okay. So pulling this all together, if someone listening wants the main takeaway about monetary policy, what should it be?
I think the core thing is this. Monetary policy is how the people in charge of the central bank try to steer the economy.
Using those levers.
Right, using interest rates, money supply, sometimes exchange rates, to try and hit those big goals.
Mm.
Keeping inflation low and stable, supporting jobs, and fostering steady economic growth.
And it affects us directly.
Directly. Through loan costs, savings returns, job prospects, the purchasing power of our money. It's not abstract. It shapes our financial world.
So understanding the basics really gives you insight into these huge forces acting on us all. That feels really useful.
I think so too. And it maybe leaves us with a final thought to chew on.
Go on.
Given all these things that affect how well monetary policy works, you know, people's confidence, global shocks, those time lags, what do you think is the single biggest challenge central bankers face today when they try to steer the ship?
That's a tough one. Confidence? Or maybe just the sheer unpredictability of it all.
Exactly. There's no easy answer, but it's definitely something worth thinking about.